Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 253, recorded sometime back in May. This is our bonus episode about the aquaponics tour, and we're going to play it. The audio quality came out fairly decent, and so we're going to go ahead and play it. It's a little disjointed, so I'm going to give you some information before we start. This part here, we're going to continue with. Someone had asked what kinds of nutrients that you added to the water, and she said nothing except for one, iron.
Since there's no soil, the plants do need iron to take up the nutrients. In fact, that's why you see some of these blonde or lighter green leaves, is because I needed to put more iron in, and I had some real big growth right here next to the fish tank, and they just gobbled it all up, and by time it didn't get around. Okay. So we've moved that out, and now it's gradually greening up again, but they do need iron. And so
the first ones in the line always get more iron?
Oh yes, because that's straight out of the fish tank, and that's where all the nutrients come from. The iron will gradually filter through, and it causes the dirt to be red, or the water to be red.
It's just styrofoam.
Oh yeah, this is genius. Water world all over again.
You buy styrofoam.
This is Dow Blue Board, and it comes in 2 foot by 8 foot. And it's very, very dense. It's a building foam. And so you have to paint it with a bright white outdoor latex paint.
Okay.
So that the UV rays don't destroy it. Gradually it starts turning into powder.
Right.
And then you drill your holes. And there's a whole philosophy behind the whole system. So
explain that part. Yeah, for our lovely listeners, the philosophy behind aquaponics.
And maybe just to start, could you tell us why you jumped in?
When we first moved out here, we were going to be hobby farmers. But we realized in order to have a $1 million hobby farm, you had to start with $2 million. That's my husband's joke. But it consumes. It's the money pit until you get it up and running. So when we did this first one, we realized, oh my gadfree, we've got more food here than we can use. We had more food than we could use in the dirt system. You know, I was given greens right and left, and I had all of this side was tomatoes and cucumbers. I canned tomatoes and cucumbers until I was going like, ah! And I just had a few of each one of them. I had peas and green beans and lettuce and radishes and carrots and beets and everything. And it was way too much for us and our kids. We have 5 children. Of course, they're not real big fresh eaters. McDonald's has more of a flair for them. But they're changing. So when we realized we had much more than what we could use, we thought, oh, we'll just take it to farmers markets. Well, here, Grantsville is kind of out in the boonies. And so we took some stuff to farmers market, and it sold, but truly hobby-ish. Well, we had the alpaca at the same time, and I was making boots, slippers, hats, gloves, scarves, everything with the alpaca. And I still do that, but and so I got to be a little bit too divided and abstract. You know, not enough of me, not enough focus on one thing. Plus trying to put the infrastructure in. So my younger brother is the one that started us thinking about converting it to aquaponics. And my husband was like, no, the dirt's working really fine. Then he's a pilot, and so he would fly in to Salt Lake to drive to Wendover and then fly out of Wendover to do all of his flights. And so he kept talking to us about it and talking to us about it. And then finally, he said something about commercial. You could build one commercial to do, take the place of a commercial, you know, to be the size of a commercial, which is 4 of them the size that we have right there in the big greenhouse. And so we thought, well, we're supposed to be retired. We don't know how much we want to get back into you know, working 12 hours a day. Now we work 14 hours a day. So Tim Mann of Friendly Aquaponics was having a seminar in Tennessee, and I have a sister in Texas, so I was going to fly out to see her in Texas, go to Tennessee, take the seminar, and then come back home. And so I did that. I took his 5-day seminar, which cost $1,500 to learn all the things, how to do this. And so we came back, and we said, okay, are we going to do it? Let's start small. Let's convert this one into an aquaponic. So we did.
So did you already have your grow boxes in?
We were in the dirt.
Okay.
We had taken and dug down the width of a 2x8 and lined boxes with 2x8s.
Okay.
And then we brought in garden soil and we started doing all of that. But still, it gets 120 in here. And that just, even though it's humid, it just saps the soil dry.
Uh-huh.
And so I was constantly having to water,
Right.
And we had a 2-foot bed on this side, a 2-foot bed on that side, and then 2 4-foot beds here in the
mm-hmm.
center.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an all-day job almost.
Yeah.
Even though, because we had the windows open, the wind blows horribly, and weeds would come in. We had morning glory coming up. We had just the whole 9 yards of it.
Yeah.
And so we decided we were going to convert it to aquaponics.
Yep.
And that was in March. Terry started taking the soil out and leveling all of this, and we designed fly. If I were to do it again, I would not put him close to the edge. Because when I'm working with a 2x4 tray like this, and I just want to clean out the dead growth, I can't reach.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the other house, I can go from both sides.
Either side.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was a design flaw. He didn't want, and the reason we kind of did this, not thinking all the way through it, he was wanting to make a complete circuit, just one loop of the water. The water comes out there, flows from here to here. Over there and then back into the fish tank from right there.
Uh-huh.
If we'd have done 4, the water would have come in this way up to that one and then exited down this one, and so the outflow would have been down there, so we would have had to bring a pipe all the way back over here.
Mm-hmm.
Which he did over there.
Mm-hmm.
But it just makes it so much easier to be able to get on both sides.
Yeah.
The, you know, the what, $30 it costs for the PVC or whatever to pull it up is well worth it.
Yeah.
It's on a gravity system except for the last outlet, and that's where the water pump goes to pump it back into the fish tank. So we have
kind of show us the detail on that as part of this. I'd love to look at the detail a little bit more on the pumping and how that follows.
Well, this was an experiment right here. This was our strawberry grower. And it worked wonderful as long as the weather was cool.
Okay.
I had, it was clear full of 50 strawberries. And we had strawberries and blossoms, you know. I don't know how many pounds I got off of it, but every strawberry plant had 3 to 5 strawberries on it.
Wow.
And well, of course, the grandkids come in, just pick as they were.
Yeah,
so we grazed on them. Never did can any of them. And then it started getting warm, and all of a sudden they started like...
Yeah.
Well, so two things. It was way too warm. We tested the water in here. It was 85. Way too hot for strawberries, because strawberries are spring cool flower plants.
Okay.
Plus, as the roots got bigger, the oxygen was not enough. We only had one air stone going from there.
Yeah.
So,
do you harvest your fish?
Yes.
So what size do you start with?
We start with a dollar fish, which is 4 inches long, and it's 25 cents an inch, and we have rainbow trout and tiger trout.
Nice.
And
you purchase those?
Yeah, we purchase them from Cold Creek Trout Farm in Ogden.
Okay.
So 1-inch fish, you think?
Yeah. They were 4 inches. Fingerlings is what they call them.
And somebody was asking the question about whether or not they, because they're a cold water fish, would they do well in an aquaponics
system? They do well in aquaponics system. We were able to, they get stressed. They're finicky. They, if the water fluctuates more than 4 degrees, if it goes 5 and 6, they go, oh, belly up, I'm dead. They are finicky that way. But we have found a way around that.
Okay.
So we just take and, because the water is a good thermal mass, it holds its heat, and in the summertime, the troughs will keep maintain their heat. So on the return line, we just run the water through an evaporative cooler pad.
Okay.
And so as it travels down that evaporative cooler pad, by the time it goes back into the tank, it's already cooled down.
Oh.
So it doesn't stop the flow?
It doesn't stop the flow, So the same amount is flowing into the pipe, out of the pipe, and he still has it installed in there. So the same flow is coming out of the pipe, it just filters down, and the cooler pad is about like this.
Okay.
And then he's got holes all along the bottom that drain down.
Now, did Albert help build that?
No, that was his, we came up with that idea, you know. Okay, because in Arizona, a lot of times they run it over. Anytime you run water over rocks or anything, it oxygenates it and cools it down.
Okay.
Even in Arizona. So
it gives it both the oxygenation.
Both the oxygen and the cool down.
Do you have to run air over it to keep to it, so the evaporative cooler process
occurs, he puts a fan on it sometimes okay. Just the wind and opening up the windows, sometimes just depending on the temperature in the greenhouse.
Okay.
Interesting. When I was in molecular genetics, I did a study project on the cellular oxygenation of trout.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Why they can withstand cold weather and high altitude.
Yeah.
It's really quite interesting.
They
never thought it'd be useful now, 25 years later.
And it's fun because sometimes, depending on how soon I gut them after we catch them, that little air bladder will just be clearful. And their gills will just be so pink and so.
Mm-hmm.
But if they get finicky and they go belly up, you can still harvest them if their gills are still pink. If they start to turn white, then the meat's not that good. So
you get that often.
So
we did until we perfected our little cooler thing. So I have to tell you a story about trout, right?
Yep.
We had trout in this tank, and then we had another big poly tank that held 300 and some odd gallons right there where Grace is. And that we had the koi in there because you can't miss koi and trout together because koi are omnivores or anyway. They bloat up if they eat the trout food. So we are all here for Memorial Day weekend, not too many days from where we are right now. And the kids are out playing and they're playing downstairs and doing, you know, they're got their swords and they're running in and around the house and down the basement and everything. And we have lunch and it's all fine. And then they all go home and it's time for me to come out here and feed the trout. And I open the door and push back the little cover we have on it. And I see bellies up, solid mass of bellies up. And I just start screaming, Terry, 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 we come out here. And the air, there's no electricity out here.
Mm-hmm.
We start following the path all along, go to the basement, and the tripper. Somebody thought, oh, what's this? Let's pretend like this is our shields up or whatever, and flip that little breaker.
Oh, no.
He counted 88 trout.
Mm-hmm. So that brings up my question. Do you have any backup?
We do now. We have a generator that...
Is it automatic? Or?
No, we've got a warning system in the house. If the power goes out, it puts out the most obnoxious noise that you can never sleep through. And then he just goes and hits the breaker. Because there's enough oxygen in there that they could last for probably... As many as we had for probably about an hour.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure it had been.
You know what's the first aid technique?
What's that?
Rescued a fish before.
Actually, a trout?
You put oxygen peroxide in your water.
hydrogen peroxide.
Oh,
because
really?
It has an extra oxygen molecule.
Interesting.
And
well,
it revives them. I mean, I don't know if 80 fish, but, but
fish.
I've seen that done. I've done it.
Interesting.
At, yeah, you put the, it releases that extra oxygen.
Well, the koi, bless their little hearts, they were just swimming around. Not a problem. Not one belly up on them at all.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know if it was the ratio of water per fish or what, but they survived. Koi, I mean, well, we have found a couple of koi flopped out, their skin almost dry, put them back in, gone like this, and away they go.
Yeah. It's amazing.
So they're
very
hardy.
They are a lot more hardy, but taste terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, so do you sell them for people that are interested in ponds? And
we don't have enough yet. We probably in that tank right there where we have the koi now, there's probably maybe 50.
Oh,
we've
okay,
got
so.
One that's about like that. Maybe two or three that are about like that.
Yeah,
some that are about like that. And then, yeah.
How come you can't raise tilapia in Utah? How come you can't
they are afraid that it will get into the natural waterways.
Right.
And the more we're doing this, and here people are like, oh, yeah, we have tilapia, but they're illegal. There's an aquaponics down in St. George that has tilapia.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I guess if you want, but who's going to come up here and look in my, what kind of fish do you have in there? You can't even see them, number
one.
Are
they pretty hardy, tilapia?
Tilapia don't like cold.
They don't.
No, they don't. They don't. And see, that's the delicate balance. If you're in a cold climate, they don't excrete as much because they don't eat as much, so you don't have as much fertilizer. That's one of the problems I have with the koi, in that their water, they don't like it 60. They don't like it 60. They still eat and they still excrete at 60, but they like it 70, 72, 75, 80. They're really cool with it, you know, but that's not where we want to go.
So that's why probably tilapia.
How do you control the temperature of the water? Is it with the air, or do you have a heater?
We have this beautiful thing right here. This is a rocket mass heater stove, which has been used, and then it needs to be cleaned out.
This is the 55-gallon drum?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it has two core stems inside, a smaller one, an 8-inch on the inside, and then a 10-inch. And in between the 8 and 10-inch is vermiculite, or
is
perlite.
Okay,
and then, so you go a tube in, a packed tube, and then there's space on the outside. So the heat goes sideways and hits that back of that barrel, and then it's forced up through the center, and then hits this plate, and then forced back down. And then this is the exhaust back here. Well, when Albert helped Terry build this, we were experimenting and thought, well, okay, if we heat the ground, it'll keep it warmer. So it exhausts and splits right here and goes along the tanks. And then about the fish tank, it goes over to the stack.
Pipes that run underneath the tanks?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Heater
pipes?
Vents. Uh-huh.
Like
heater vents.
Aluminum, like
yeah, them. Just your regular heater vents. And on each side over here, you'll see a cap. Halfway.
Oh, yeah.
There's one on each side. Those are clean outs.
And how much do you have to clean out? Because I understand it burns pretty efficiently.
It does burn efficient when it's really hot. That's probably 2 days worth, 2 or 3 days worth of ash.
Wow.
And we didn't get it hot. Uh-huh. The hotter it burns, the other stove doesn't have hardly any ash compared to this one. And we think it's because the exhaust splits.
Mm-hmm.
If it were a single exhaust to draw, it would burn all that ash out.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
This is the heat conduit right here.
This is, right behind you, you'll see it come out of the trough. See that black tube coming up?
Yeah.
Okay.
This right here?
Yeah, that's a stainless steel tube that in the wintertime we pump water through this, and this is stainless steel. It goes all the way down this pipe. That heats the water and exits out this right here. And we get a constant temperature of about 85 to 90 degrees.
Uh-huh.
And it goes in and it feeds through the tank.
And it, and I wish it went in the front of that tank, that trough, and then around
so
through
if
here.
So reposition something like this, it would be the way to do it.
Yeah, but we didn't want to have this right in the as the door came in, you know. So, and the longer the pipe is, the more it loses its heat, and so it's got to be as close. But this works pretty good.
It
keeps the
line?
No.
Okay.
We tried to. My son is an engineer, and he calculated how much copper or how much stainless steel tube in each one of the troughs that the water would. It didn't work because of the thermal mass of the outside water, and it was not near enough, you know, to loop it around.
So
but
the,
it does.
The plants need a certain temperature in the water.
Yes. The plants grow the best when the temperature is 72.
Okay.
That's the optimal temperature. But in the wintertime, we can barely keep it at 60, 68.
Mm-hmm.
65, 68, right through there are the two temperatures.
Even
you know.
With your
mm-hmm. Well, if we ran this 24 hours a day, we
sure.
could probably raise it. That's just not feasible for us. I mean, if we had some kind of an automatic auger that would feed it automatically,
yeah.
but
so
where we have to come.
What is your growing season then?
I've grown 12 months out of the year.
So, but you were saying that it's not.
Well, they just don't grow as fast.
I see.
Yeah. Kale does really good. The lettuces do really good.
Sure.
In that cooler,
yep.
But to well, of course, tomatoes, cucumbers, peppers, zucchini, stuff like that. The ambient air is not. But I picked my last cucumber, my last tomato, probably January 4th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep, that's nice.
And it's because I would cover it.
Sure.
I would cover
it
with the agro. Mm-hmm. Ideally, I would love to make a kilt. They call it a kilt, and you can either do it on the outside or the inside, where you just put a big old sleeping bag over the top of it. But yeah, they
and
are
that's for
expensive.
The wintertime, right?
You just do it at wintertime. Yeah, I mean, you just do it at night when the sun goes down, because
it's a heating.
It's to hold the heat in. The greenhouses will hold the heat for about 30 minutes after the sun goes down.
Mm-hmm.
And then 30 minutes after that sun goes down, it just really normalizes the temperature.
So now Ellen was saying something. Does that also work as a, like when it gets too hot?
The kilt?
Yeah.
You wouldn't want a kilt because it would block out the light. But you can put a shade cloth over the top of them.
Okay,
yeah, you can put a shade cloth over the top.
Mm-hmm. In your training, were they using similar greenhouses, or did they use Solex or glass?
He talked about several kinds that we could optionally use ourselves.
Okay.
he was starting to build the D style,
mm-hmm.
which is what we kind of fashioned that one after.
Right.
D style, you have a solid north wall, solid east and west wall,
and then
just the only the
kind of passive solar.
Which I tried to get Albert. I said, Albert, I want this facing east and west. No, because your wind structure, you've got to have us. Albert, I want it east and west. No. Albert, I wish you would have built it east and west.
Yeah.
So, but
you don't know. But they gave information.
Yeah, they
plenty
gave
of
all
information.
Plenty
for
of information and
a variety.
And, mm-hmm. We're teaching that when
that.
We teach that class. We're teaching classes that are $300 for 6 hours, and we'll cover from A to Z in that.
Okay, where do you teach them?
We're going to teach them here.
Oh, okay.
And we'll have just a little light buffet, which you'll have a sampling of all the greens and the fish.
Cool.
Nice.
Oh, that's really
so,
nice.
And they'll start probably the 1st of July,
okay.
end of June, 1st of July,
mm-hmm.
as soon as we get our advertising up and get, and we figure we could do well with 10 students each teaching, and we want to do 6 classes of that.
Okay, and so you have information about different types
mm-hmm.
of wraps.
Mm-hmm. All different types of wraps.
Is this the one that Albert put on?
Yeah.
Is it pretty sturdy?
So far, the only problem we have had is with the windows, and that's because we open and close them so much that they have become brittle where we handle them with our hands.
Yeah, your oils.
Yeah.
Your hand oils. Yeah, amazing.
Interesting. I was using regular house cleaning gloves to come and do the core and everything, and they started just melting from the bacteria. The bacteria. They would just get real mushy, and it's like, wait, and it's the bacteria that's in the water.
Mm. So you don't see any problems with people's digestive systems?
This is God's creation of what plants are supposed to. And the real thing is, what does soil do for plants?
Well, it holds moisture and nutrients.
It's right? Anchor and moisture. Mm-hmm. And holds the nutrients. So, and it provides oxygen. That's why you have to let your soil dry out for a little bit.
Right.
So the oxygen can come back in. Yeah. The bacteria needs the oxygen. Right.
Yep.
And if I don't clean out one of my rafts, and it gets kind of a lot of bacteria built up on the bottom of it, I'll start seeing little red earthworms.
No kidding.
Yeah, the funny? Little tiny, and they actually have etched the underside of some of the styrofoam.
Is that because they're cleaning up the bacteria?
Oh, yeah. See all of this? That's because at one time this one wasn't really clean, and it started getting those little earthworms.
Yeah. So yeah, how do you clean this?
Paint is compatible. It's okay. It's okay.
I'm sorry. Say again. I'll answer your question.
That latex paint is.
Yeah, okay. Latex is mostly just to keep the sun from causing the styrofoam to powder,
to
biodegrade.
Okay.
I clean them just with water and a scrub brush.
Okay, and that's after you've harvested?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
This one gets really dusty because the wind just comes right into those windows and it just blows dust. Horrible.
And you'll clean the top and bottom.
Mm-hmm. No, just top.
Just top? Oh, you don't clean the bottom at all.
Because that's where the back.
That's
well,
where you want it
yeah,
to be okay.
If I'm going to dry exactly. If I'm going to dry it out, I'll clean top and bottom.
Right.
But if I'm going to just put plants right back in it and put it back in, I won't do the bottom because it gets that slime on fish, and if you touch on the inside, it's that slime. That's the bacteria. That's the friendly bacteria.
Okay.
So you,
yeah,
you
do
keep
you use coal?
Yes, we keep the coal to keep it at night.
Okay, because
so,
it burns longer.
Right, and so when we come in, we'll still have embers in the in the stove, and the water will have dropped down to maybe 70, but it's still putting in warm water, and as the cold 15 degrees outside is extracting the cold out of the water.
What's on? Is this tar paper?
No, this is actually greenhouse weed barrier.
Okay. This is good stuff.
Yeah, it is good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how are these structured? How does the water get held in? Looks like you have like a plastic liner.
Yes, the water is held in with a pond liner. It's actually a pond liner. And it's a food grade, and it's white.
Uh-huh.
And it comes in 6 foot. You can see it more here.
Okay.
And so
could
we
you
just
carry this over, please? Thank
you. Opposite wrap a package. We lined it.
This is
mm-hmm. And the philosophy is so that you don't have it bulging on the outside is you take the pond liner and you like if this is the actual hard angle, mm-hmm. you angle it.
Okay.
So it doesn't go tight into those corners. You just kind of loop it down in a U shape.
Okay.
And then you get to the end, and you fold the end all the way over, and you make just a little nice fold like you do a Christmas present.
Huh.
Fold that flap up, and then push the other one over, and you've got a nice little fold here in the corner, like a reverse fitted sheet.
On the outside of the box.
Mm-hmm. On the inside.
On the inside.
And so you loop this over here, and this is it right here.
Right.
You can feel how sturdy it is.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so we just stapled it along the edge, and then put the 1x2. Yeah, it is pretty thick. Put the 1x2 over the top of it to hold it in place,
right.
Just so we don't mess it up when we're dragging the rafts
Is it 5 foot? Is it 5 feet?
It's 51 inches.
Okay. Or,
talk about your pests in the greenhouse.
The water tests?
No, pests.
Oh, pests. The only real pest I have had has been aphids, because that was my fault. I left lettuce in here way too long. And so as lettuce gets old, it turns brown and mushy and cruddy. And as in nature, anytime a disease is left, pests come in to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. All we did is buy some ladybugs, put them on it, and it was gone within a week.
Wow.
But I can avoid that, and that was in the summertime. Sure. I can avoid that by making sure I clean up all the dead.
Yeah. So that's more of the workload.
That's
than
the work.
Is.
But if you're harvesting all the time, and see, we weren't harvesting as much because there were no markets in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. It was at the end of the markets, mm-hmm. and I had lettuce in there from October to March, mm-hmm. which is a long time. Yeah. I was going to show you these. I may have pulled all the roots. But even though I've harvested the tops and pulled all the roots out, the roots are starting to grow back.
Wow.
Yeah, they just want to grow.
Yeah,
Do you feel like your training that you received, it was sufficient to get you started?
Oh,
or
yes.
did you have
oh,
to
yes.
do a lot of research
no,
beyond that?
When I signed up for the class, Tim sent me a booklet. And I read through the booklet and acquainted myself with the booklet. And so by the time I got, it was a 5-day training.
Yeah.
So I had to pay for a hotel for 5 days, plus my airfare out there and back. And so it was quite an investment. I feel that I can do the same thing within 6 hours.
Yeah, because they fill the time.
Because we had
probably
a lunch break. We had not so much vendors. We were in the classroom, and a lot of it was about Tim's experiences with his aquaponics and how he found it to work and mm-hmm. how what he found didn't work. And so there was a lot of information in there that was good,
but it wasn't
pertinent to mm-hmm. this. And,
it was
you know,
filler.
Yep, it really was filler. Mm-hmm. But it was wonderful in that, boy, I knew what I was doing by the time I got back.
Sure. Absolutely.
And Terry and I feel that we could do that in 6 hours with people, with having them in here looking, training, watching. And we'll have a setup, which is called a tabletop, that you can actually do the bulkheads, you can do the lines. You'll actually do all
hands-on
of that
stuff.
Hands-on.
So you get to practice.
You get to practice. So by the time you go home with all your notes and the booklet that we give you, you'll be able to say, okay, I can do this.
Mm. And when's your first class?
We want to have it the last week in June,
week
right
in,
before that,
last week
24th
in June.
Of July weekend.
Oh, last week of July.
Excuse me.
The
no,
third
the last
week in July.
The last weekend in June, right before the 4th of July.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, hopefully I'll be back.
Gotcha.
That's our special week we're always with.
Oh, is it?
Definitely want to be part
yeah,
of
that
it.
One I might want to sign up for.
Okay.
Yeah, you know. What about you guys?
That will be definitely...
Depends on where we're at with moving.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're moving
we
this month up
moved,
to Layton, so...
Right. Oh, are you?
Might be a little bit
see,
nuts.
We want... There'll be the 4th of July weekend we're not going to, and then the 24th of July weekend we're not going to. We just decided on the dates the other day.
Do you have any in August?
Yes, we will have some in August.
August, we might. Mm-hmm. The dust may have settled enough to...
Yeah. And I say up to 10. We could... It would be worth our time to take the whole day and prepare everything and to do it for as little as 5 students. But the best would be for 10.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because between the two greenhouses, people could be looking and seeing and mm-hmm. and experimenting. And
so when is the sign up?
Well, you could sign up now.
I'm ready.
Yeah. Well, I'll take your information
and
send it
to Ray and double check that. But
you
I
know,
think that hands-on.
Yep.
You know, I can explain. I can explain it to you, and you'll go home and now, what did she say?
Exactly. So
where you have a sheet there, and I'm talking about that, and you can make notes, and as you make notes on it, you're going to say, oh, okay.
Take pictures.
Yes, mm-hmm. And we'll have pictures and stuff. Like, this kale here has been there since October.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It's sprouting out, it's leaf, you know, seeding, and I'm thinking, do I want to take the time to let it seed and collect the seeds?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Everything's heirloom.
No, I get it from Mountain Valley Seeds.
Oh, yeah, I know that.
Which
They're
is
great.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
But some of the things that I just barely put in here that are doing quite well is that dill
mm-hmm.
has been in there for 4 weeks.
Oh, wow.
It sprouted. It was in the sprouter. It was in the sprouter for 2 weeks, and then I put it there, and that's what it is for 4 weeks.
Amazing.
Spinach, for some reason, I don't know why the spinach is not doing well.
Does it require a lot of iron?
It could, maybe, because this system, but even in the other system, and I've had people say that are planting it in the ground, that their spinach just isn't doing good.
Hmm.
So I don't know if it's
something with the seed companies that are having problems.
Well, and I've got some seeds in the house that I'm trying to sprout that are spinach seeds, and they're not even sprouting.
Wow.
Now, Tim has said ants have become a problem for him, and now I've seen these little, you know, I've got evidence of ants here.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen it be a problem with the plants. Maybe because I don't have anything here. These I cut 2 weeks ago, and they've already put out this.
I have a question, too, for you.
Uh-huh.
We have gophers, a lot of gophers. I'm sure you guys do, too. Do they give you any trouble with that pool liner at all?
Okay. That's nice.
Yeah, gophers. My dirt garden out there, gophers dug up my cabbage lately, my corn. I mean, such a controlled environment. And I was talking to the kid that came out for our water rights, and he looked at the greenhouse and he says, are you planning on putting up 4 of these? And I said, yeah. And he says, well, with those 4, the amount of plants you have, that's equivalent to 1 full acre.
Yeah. It's amazing. So what are the largest plants you can grow in here?
Depending on how much real estate you want it to take up.
Yeah.
The kale is probably the largest plant, and it kind
and
of
you
has
grow,
peas.
You can't really grow peas and
you
carrots
can grow,
and
you
also
we
like
we did
that.
Not. Carrots, you can grow almost anything in aquaponics.
Okay.
Even root vegetables, and the thing about root vegetables, they don't like to be in the water.
Right.
But their roots like to be in the water. So the tuber itself, if you had a tall enough basket or whatever you want to call, so just the bottom root would get in the water and
yeah.
it could grow up out of it.
Yeah.
You could even do carrots.
Okay.
But
so there's a little stream that comes from the tip of the carrot. That's the part
that's the taproot.
Yeah.
That's the taproot. And carrots do have roots that come out a little bit from their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But just for the sheer mechanics of it, put them in the ground.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
But I have done, okay, down here in this corner, there are, pardon me, this is, I'll get the name here in a second. what is that? Turnip. A turnip.
Oh.
See this turnip? Come look at this turnip.
I'll be darned.
So it's just growing above.
Yeah.
And by pulling up, you'll see the roots are all underneath.
Uh-huh. That's amazing.
Yep. Okay.
No,
I just had
to complete.
Yeah.
So, this is mustard
seed. Mm-hmm. Nice.
Go ahead.
So now what about the aquaponics tank itself? Be careful of your head.
You don't want to.
Oh my goodness.
How many pounds you need for the square foot is 0.03 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not even a third. 32nd of something. So for each square foot of raft space you have, you need 0.03 pounds. For this system, we calculated that we needed to have pretty close to 50 pounds. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The guy that brought us the trout said, if you get 50 pounds of trout in there, they're going to be so stressed out. So he brought us the equivalent of 25 pounds.
Okay.
Little 4 inchers.
Okay.
Which was about 300 fish.
Wow.
So naturally, they got stressed. Some of them died. Mm-hmm. We harvested some. Mm-hmm. So we got them. So they lasted all through the winter. We got them. No. We got them in March. Or April. Mm-hmm. And between that time and May, it must not have been Memorial Day. It must have been Labor Day. It must have been Labor Day. Because they were good 8 to 10 inches.
Okay.
And some of them were even 13 inch. I think he had 3 to 5.
Can you harvest them like in a cycle? That's mm-hmm. what you're trying to do.
Yeah, because there'll be aggressive ones that will eat first.
Oh, okay.
And we'll go over there and I'll toss some food in and you'll be able to see. But the aggressive ones will eat first and then you'll have others that are... And we had some little small ones. I know they spawned because at 55 they spawn.
Okay. When it's cooler.
Yeah, when it's cooler. And I know, surely that little 4-inch fish didn't stay that way for
right.
6-8 months.
They were reproducing.
They were reproducing. So,
So have you had to buy fish to
we did for that.
A little bit?
We did for the big greenhouse.
For the one.
Yeah. Well, we did koi for this one. And uh-huh. then when we got that one, we was like, okay, koi's way too expensive.
Yeah.
Way too expensive. They're $1 an inch per.
Yes.
Wow.
Instead of 25.
Have you had any information about solar?
Yeah.
In addition to your...
My brother is...
Yeah. In addition to...
He's working on... And we calculated that we needed to have 4 panels just to run the 3 pumps. So we've got 3, 6... I think he's got an extra one in there, so 7 pumps. The 7 pumps, we needed 4 panels.
Okay. And the panels are how big?
The panels
today
are...
Today, they change.
Yeah, they have.
Technology
but
changes.
The real cost for solar is in the batteries.
Right. Right.
So he's still working on that for me.
Yeah, there's some new batteries right here that are coming out that are holding like 90 kilowatts.
Yeah.
And I don't know what they are, but the technology is really coming on. And the price.
Yeah, the price is coming down the more that it's getting used.
Yeah, so we'll have
used.
To watch that.
Yeah.
So how old is your rocket nest, Peter?
This is the second winter we've used it.
Okay. It looks like it's showing a lot of breakdown.
Well, it had... He actually took it off. And I'm trying to remember why he took it off.
Here we were looking at some sheet-like material, like some sort of tarp or covering, and someone asked about it, and she proceeded to explain that it helped protect from frost, and about an experience she had had using it to protect from frost.
Well, I had covered it with Agrabond, and we were going to be leaving, and it was a cold night, but I knew the day was going to be hot, and this would get to be 100 degrees. And so I thought, I don't want to leave that Agrabond over the top of those. So I came out, and it wasn't quite above freezing in here yet. And as I pulled it back, I heard plink, 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 plink.
Little ice falling off.
These were freezing. The tips of all of it, this whole trough. The tips froze just that fast. No, I didn't. But it turned brown. All of this turned brown. And so when I had to pick it off to take it to harvest.
Yeah. When you're touching some of the plants, they're so healthy.
They are. Yeah. Even these ones that look really
sad.
They're
so hydrated and they're thick. And
Yeah, we went to the Salt Lake Farmers Market. Even, you know, usually things get really bitter when they're old.
What is this?
This is Russian red pale. No, this is curly blue. This is Scottish blue. You have Russian red, Scottish blue, and then that behind you, that kind of leathery looking stuff, that is Lacinato. No, the one directly behind Ray, that. And usually that is a dark, dark green.
It's almost got a milk to it.
Like 20 years ago, you nobody was growing kale.
Yeah.
You know? I mean,
did you get this one?
No, we love kale. We,
That's
lettuce. That's why
lettuce.
It's a little bitter.
Mm-hmm. That's lettuce.
You can either put it in
Yeah, we should.
And here someone asked how often water needed to be changed or topped off, and she explained that.
We maybe have to put water in once a month, but he runs the hose in maybe for 25 minutes once a month.
That's amazing.
Just a garden hose, just
And you don't have to dechlorinate it or anything because it's a small proportion of the water?
It's a well.
Or, oh, okay.
It's well.
You use well water, so that makes sense. So I had a question. I know that some aquaponic systems use like lightweight expanded clay aggregate instead of like a styrofoam raft. And why did you decide to use this instead? What are the advantages?
You saw those roots, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to pick pebbles out of those roots?
That's a pain.
When I went back to Tennessee, the guy, farm that we went to, he had used that, and he had tubs of these expensive marble-looking clay things.
Right.
And he says, they are worthless.
Really?
They grow, he says, but it is so hard. You have to clean out all of the clean, it's so labor intensive. Right. Now there's a guy in West Valley, he was doing hydroponics. He had built him, I think, 4 or 6 beds outside, and they were 8 foot by 50 feet, and he just had black plastic lining. But he had to dump the water every time he changed crops because the chemicals got too hot. There was nothing to balance that out. Here, the fish create all of the nutrients.
Now, in terms of iron, what chemical form of iron do you put in the water?
F-E-E-D-D-H-E-A. It has to be double E and double D. And in the other greenhouse, I used all the bottle in here. The other greenhouse I still have, I think. So if we want to brave it and go over to the swamp, has never done it.
Okay, sorry, that cuts off a bit suddenly. We had to kind of hastily explain that we needed to leave to go pick up one of our children who was on a field trip, and of course thanked the tour guide and everything, but we had to leave pretty quickly. But it was an interesting experience. We hope you learned a few things about aquaponics. We'll be back to our normal format next week from our new house that has successfully closed and everything, and we've already started the moving process. Brought several loads yesterday, and we'll continue to do that throughout this week. By the end of this week, we'll be moved in, so yay! We'll be broadcasting or podcasting from our new location next week. Until then, may the fish be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.